information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care. Here to border on shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Open up my third eye. I got a mystic mind. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 227 from Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, shame on Wu, the debt ceiling, our fate, and the Norway nightmare. Patsies, ringleaders, and manufactured murders. Ruling class, EMPs, and esoteric reactions. Black ops, blacklist, bad food, land grab. Plus the back-to-black news purge, Quaid's corruption, and tons more. It is all here, episode 227, July 29th, 2011, for Media Monarchy. com. Mystic Mind. That is Those Darlins from their brand new record, Screws Get Loose. And they're coming to town, Portland, Oregon, this Tuesday at the Bunk Bar. And I got my tickets at Will Call. Digging that record. It's that great mash of girl groups, old school rock and roll, country style reverb. I love it. You may recall also hearing a couple tracks of theirs on our previous mixtape number 9, 13 Women. But ladies and gentlemen, we are here, and it's now, and it's episode 227 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's July 29th, 2011, and my name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, pushing your buttons on the blog since 9/11/05, and we're coming up on the fifth anniversary of our live show here from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, and simulcast worldwide thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com and RevereRadio.net, and thanks to all the other alternative media outlets that help spread the word about this show. Our hosting thanks to Radio23.org, RadioForAll.net, and archive.org, and of course, as always, a huge thanks to the entire community at tragedyandhope.com. We're on FaceSpace, Twitter, Tube, Tumblr, Gmail, Skype, and so much more, all with Media Monarchy as your keyword or username. And you may notice if you go to the top right of the flagship site, MediaMonarchy.com, there's a donate button from the much hated and much maligned PayPal. And we'll have to discuss perhaps something to do with that in their collusion. There are alternatives. But we are essentially a one-man show. And your support helps keep Media Monarchy going and growing. And I don't have any donations to mention to you this week. So let me just put out the call. If you've never donated before and you've thought about it, I implore you to throw a couple bucks our way. It helps keep the domains going, the DJ dues, the Skype credit, all the bells and whistles that we're not going broke trying to do this show. We're doing it as cheaply and as DIY as possible. And that, I think, kind of comes from my background, college radio, and my upbringing and all of that, that we don't have time to get into right now. As fascinating as that may be. So very much like many of our weeks, jam-packed. We've got a lot of news and a lot of clips to go over. If you're new to the show, welcome aboard. Arms wide open. We're nonpartisan here. We look at all news, left, right, up, down, and we don't really believe in the parties and the phony systems, and we want to try and bust through all of these fake paradigms. So as we glance at the breaking news, we see it's all about John Bonner and Fort Hood and the debt ceiling. Our fate. Senator Schumer says hopes for U.S. debt compromise Friday. GDP report shows economy even weaker than expected. An AWOL soldier admits to Fort Hood attack plan. Those stories we will, of course, get to on this episode 227. Last week, you may recall, episode 226, the Oslo-Norway nightmare was unfolding as we were doing the show. And we reported for you live when I saw and clicked back for updates. Oh, God, now there's shootings going on. Of course, now, a week later, we know so very much about the Norway nightmare, and we will get to that very soon. But the way we want to start is here in my own backyard of the People's Republic of Oregon, and we'll take it from our own Oregonian representative, David Wu. That's W-U. Announced his resignation from Congress Tuesday, July 26th, moments after U.S. Senators Jeff Merkley and Ron Wyden from Oregon called for his resignation. The Democrat said in a statement that he would leave office after Congress resolves the debt ceiling crisis, which we've been led to believe will happen this Tuesday, when I'm going to go see Those Darlins. With great sadness, I therefore intend to resign effective upon the resolution of the debt ceiling crisis. This is the right decision for my family, the institution of the House, and my colleagues. The Oregonian reported last Friday that Wu had been accused of an unwanted sexual encounter with the 18-year-old daughter of a childhood friend and fundraiser. The incident occurred in Orange County last year. Wu's announcement came only minutes after Oregon's two Democratic senators, Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley, called on him to resign, saying the embattled lawmaker had lost his ability to effectively serve in the wake of accusations of improper sexual conduct that, quote, are both jarring and exceptionally serious. The joint statement from the two senators came 4 days after reports that Wu engaged in unwanted sexual activity with the 18-year-old daughter of a childhood friend and contributor. The incident allegedly took place last November in Orange County, California, as Oregon Representative David Wu now announces resignation after sexual misconduct allegations.
Oregon Congressman David Wu is facing allegations of a, quote, unwanted sexual encounter with the daughter of a campaign contributor. The Oregonian broke the story, and reports a distraught young woman called Wu's Portland office this spring, accusing him of an unwanted sexual encounter, according to multiple sources. When confronted, the Oregon Democrat acknowledged a sexual encounter to his senior aide, but insisted it was consensual, sources said. The young woman reportedly graduated from high school in 2010, and reports say the incident happened over Thanksgiving weekend of last year. Oregon's KPTV has the only public statement on the issue from Wu's office, though the correspondent notes it doesn't actually address the allegation.
This is very serious, and I have absolutely no desire to bring unwanted publicity, attention, or stress to a young woman and her family.
Many news media have noted in their coverage, this is only the latest in a series of troubles for the Democratic representative. In February, this photograph of Wu in a tiger suit emerged. Staffers described the photo as a, quote, moment with his kids. That image was linked to the, quote, erratic behavior that reportedly prompted the loss of several staffers after a successful 2010 election campaign. Adding to that, more serious accusations from his past. Politico reports in 1976, Wu was accused of attempted rape by a former girlfriend. No charges were filed in that case, but Wu, who was then attending Stanford University, was required to see a counselor and was disciplined by the university. Politico also notes Representative Wu is being treated for, quote, an unspecified mental health condition and is separated from his wife. He's reportedly sought advice on the issue from House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi. For the Washington Post report, Pelosi had no comment and is, quote, totally immersed in debt talks. So is this the last straw for Wu's constituents? Well, Oregon's KATU hit the streets to find out.
Well, I still don't know what that means.
He also he also admitted that dressing up like a tiger was inappropriate. And
some simply aren't surprised at what any member of Congress has been up to these days.
Everyone's got their things that they're doing that is morally wrong, and politicians are in the spotlight, and so it happens. And I'm just glad it doesn't. It sounds like he's admitting it. He's not trying to cover it up.
I would think he'd need help.
Wu has not stated whether he has any intent to leave office, although the Oregonian reports public calls for his resignation and heavy hints from fellow politicians are growing louder. I'm Austin Kim for Newsy.
Some breaking news here. We understand that Congressman Wu of Oregon is resigning. This was actually an ongoing scandal that was occurring because he was accused of perhaps sexual misconduct with the daughter of a donor. And we're just getting some information here. The highlights being that initially he decided he was not going to seek re-election. That is what he was telling folks. But now this has changed. He is now resigning after a woman accused the congressman of making sexual advances. This has been an ongoing investigation, and there have been some problems. I'm just going to read really quickly what we've got on the latest wire here, that initially he was considering all options on the table, including not seeking re-election, whether or not he was going to serve out the rest of his term. That's according to his communications director. But he was facing mounting calls for his resignation. And I'm getting a statement from his office. I'm just going to go to my email, see if I can't check this out. Yep, here we go. This is a statement from the office of Congressman David Wu. I'll just read it to you very briefly. He says that it says Congressman David Wu issued the following statement of resignation to the United States House of Representatives. This is in quotes. It has been the greatest privilege of my life to be a United States congressman. Rare is a nation in which an immigrant child can be a national political figure. I thank God and my parents for the privilege of being an American. Now, however, the time has come to hand on the privilege of high office. I cannot care for my family the way I wish while serving in Congress and fighting these very serious allegations. The well-being of my children must come before anything else with great sadness. I therefore intend to resign effective upon the resolution of the debt ceiling crisis. This is the right decision for my family, the institution of the House, and my colleagues. It is also the only correct decision to avoid any distraction from the important work at hand in Washington. I tend to go forward with new resolve and love of my family, the state of Oregon, and our nation. This is the official statement coming from Congressman David Wu that he is now going to resign from Congress after allegations that there was a sexual misconduct.
Now, remember, kids, in Oregon, we do sex scandals right. How about Bob Packwood, born 9/11/1932, U.S. politician from Oregon and a member of the Republican Party, resigned from the U.S. Senate under threat of expulsion in 1995 after allegations of sexual harassment, abuse, and assault of women emerged, I believe connected to the Tailhook scandal, which, of course, in and of itself goes much, much deeper. How about our current mayor, Sam Adams, which I believe I've told the story. We had to be the only city in the country that interrupted the historical Obama inauguration with breaking news that our mayor was in some sex scandal. At least his was of age and consensual. But then it gets much, much worse. If we go back in time a little bit, with Neil Goldschmidt. He was the governor of Oregon. He was, I believe, Jimmy Carter's transportation secretary, yes. But in 2004, a rapid series of events resulted in Goldschmidt's confession to a sexual relationship with a 14-year-old girl in the 70s, the quick demise of his political career, including resignations from several prominent organizations, and the transfer of his many documents from the privately run Oregon Historical Society to the state-run Oregon State Archives. On May 6th, under pressure from the Willamette Week, Goldschmidt publicly announced that he had engaged in sexual relations with a 14-year-old for an extended period of time during his first term as the mayor of Portland. So that's Neil Goldschmidt, and we referenced Sam Adams, and we referenced Bob Packwood, and these are all posted as a reminder and flashbacks below the story about Oregon Representative David Wu now resigning after sexual misconduct allegations. The Willamette Week, one of our free weekly papers here, does a good job of doing their best to keep politicians honest. We also have posted up all our related Oregon oddities, such as this from KPTV.com. Former Salem police officer pleads guilty to misconduct. And Old Town Portland's drug problems continue frustrating business owners. As one notes, it's hard to build customer relationships when there's a guy smoking crack outside the window in the daylight. I suppose the highlight of that is that a record store moved out of Old Town and actually moved into closer in my own neighborhood. So I'm going to have to check that out. Ken Death Mieske, M-I-E-S-K-E, dies in prison at the age of 45. This was well before my time in Portland, Oregon. But apparently he was the racist skinhead behind the infamous 1988 baseball bat murder of an African-American man. Dead in prison. Our last note of Oregon oddities. Gasoline spilled in tanker crash has been safely removed. So that's amazing, because as of 2 days ago, it was 900 gallons of oil that were threatening to spill into the Columbia River. But nothing to see here, folks. It's all taken care of, all cleaned up. Since we were doing Oregon oddities, I decided to post along our West Virginia worry updates. Born and raised in West Virginia, I will be going back to visit at the end of August, so we'll be on a little hiatus there just to file that away. So we posted our West Virginia updates. Manchin and colleagues warn Obama arms treaty must not infringe on gun rights. That would be one of our numerous UN agreements. So that sounds good, right? Then the flip side. Senators Rockefeller and Manchin won't talk about mountaintop removal's impacts on public health. But at least Representative Nick Rahal was willing to take the questions about the growing pile of studies that raise serious questions about mountaintop removal coal mining's impacts on the health of coal field residents. Because, gosh, Senators Jay Rockefeller and Joe Manchin, both Democrats of West Virginia, are just too darn busy to be bothered with the topic. And the report goes on to discuss all the no comments and unreturned phone calls. Meanwhile, from WVRecord.com, mother takes immunization fight to the Supreme Court. Evidence of meth use closes West Virginia Technical School. That is from Reuters. And our last note from WVMetroNews.com, a Logan County, West Virginia man has advanced on America's Got Talent. Think I was going to play something from America's Got Talent, did you? That was this Protector from the White Stripes 2001 Super Mega Breakthrough album White Blood Cells. And I don't really know what he means about that comment about 300 people living out in West Virginia have no idea the thoughts that lie within you. But let's move, my friends, now to Obamasiah and Econocrash updates, debt ceiling, U.S. fate. Yes, if you've listened to any amount of these shows, you'll know I'm definitely a pun fan, but it's all within the words. And playing with the word ceiling, with what's above you, and ceiling, S-E-A-L, could mean clubbing baby animals or a Mormon ritual. So, that wordplay aside, yes, the charade, the shell game, it all goes on. Obama strikes fear into us, the U.S., while reassuring his big buddies at the big banks.
Lots of apocalyptic talk coming from the White House on the U.S. defaulting on its debt, but is the White House singing a different tune to private bankers? In private, two bankers then on the airwaves. Charlie's here with more on the story. So what is your reporting uncovered today?
A story that you will find nowhere, not even at that ridiculous network across the Hudson River. This is what sources are telling the Fox Business Network. The administration is actually downplaying the chance of default in these private conversations with bankers, even if a debt ceiling isn't raised. It's a fascinating sort of take on the thing because it contradicts essentially what Tim Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, what Barack Obama, the President of the United States, said on Friday. Geithner said over the weekend during the Sunday morning shows that we need to raise the debt ceiling. If you don't raise the debt ceiling, we will default. They must have used the default word between them about 45 times in the last 3 days. But I am telling you, and this is what we're getting this from senior sources at the big banks, at the major banks in New York, that the administration is basically telling them, okay, forget about the rhetoric. We will not default on the debt. And obviously, they don't have to default on the debt. It's a point I've made on this show, on other shows, in columns in the New York Post. We take in $2 trillion a year. We pay $200 billion a year in interest on our debt. We don't have to default. Now, that doesn't mean it'll be a pretty situation if we don't raise the debt cap. August 2nd is the drop-dead date, but we don't have to default on the debt. And I'll tell you, that's what they're telling bankers right now.
So parsing the language, though, all right, so we're not going to default on the interest payment to the debt, but what about the obligations? We heard the president a couple of weeks ago talk about Social Security being at risk.
Well, that's a different...
That's what I'm trying to nail down with
you. You see, you're falling into the Meredith Whitney.
Not me in particular. I'm just playing the devil's advocate.
Okay, I know. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take it.
Don't attack me, Charlie.
I'm not attacking you personally. This is the Meredith Whitney, you know, twisted way of looking at the world. A default is when you default on your bonds.
Right.
That's a default. That's what kills you in the markets. That's what will upend the markets and cause a financial crisis, because if the U.S. government isn't good on debt, then everything falls apart. People don't think that American Express is good on its debt, so it can't issue short-term notes so you can use your American Express card. That's when the system locks down. That's what could really happen if we default.
Okay, so
that is different. We would have to do is we would have to prioritize. We would probably not pay sort of defense contractors. We might not pay agribusiness giants on subsidies. Government will shut down, but we will not default, and it will shut down until they come to a deal.
Okay, so then what's the broader picture or the reaction or the fallout? Because, okay, fine, we make our debt obligations, pay that interest, but we can't, as you're pointing out, pay these other obligations. So then do you have roiled markets?
The default is what you see now. Nothing almost. I mean, the market knows we are not going to... Listen. The president wants to default on the debt. He can win if the debt ceiling isn't raised. Mm-hmm. And we're going to probably hear more on this. And the Republican plans, there's competing plans out there. We're going to hear more on this later. He can choose not to pay bondholders, and he can set off Armageddon. It's his choice. We have enough money to pay debt, pay other bills, not everything. We're $1 trillion short a year if we don't raise the debt ceiling. But I am telling you, we don't have to default. And I'm telling you, they are telling banks, contradicting what they're saying on air, that they are not going to default even if we don't raise the debt ceiling. The real possibility is a downgrade. And what bankers are telling me about the downgrade, it won't be a catastrophic sort of event if we go from AAA to AA, but we will see an impact. The impact will be on bond deals. Remember, all these bond deals, this gets esoteric, but bond deals and derivatives and all these things are priced off a AAA treasury. They're based on a spread, a price differential between AAAs and whatever they are, whatever they're worth. And imagine if the U.S. bond gets downgraded to a AA. Well, then all those prices change, and it's going to be an issue. That will be an issue. Banks are telling me they don't think it's going to be catastrophic, and maybe that's why you see the markets behaving okay.
Let's hope it hangs on for at least.
But no default, according to the administration, no matter what they say.
Charlie.
And you may recall we reported for you that Moody's, one, suggested getting rid of the debt ceiling entirely as they discuss cutting our rating. So Obama strikes fear into us while reassuring big banks. Meanwhile, debt ceiling negotiators think they've hit on a solution to address the debt ceiling impasse and the public's unwillingness to let go of benefits such as Medicare and Social Security that have been earned over a lifetime of work. Create a new Congress. This super Congress, composed of members of both chambers and both parties, isn't mentioned anywhere in the Constitution, but would be granted extraordinary new powers. Under a plan put forth by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, and his counterpart, Majority Leader Harry Reid, Democrat of Nevada, legislation to lift the debt ceiling would be accompanied by the creation of a 12-member panel made up of 12 lawmakers, 6 from each chamber and 6 from each party. Legislation approved by the Super Congress, which some on Capitol Hill are calling the Super Committee, would then be fast-tracked through both chambers where it couldn't be amended by simple regular lawmakers who'd have the ability only to cast an up-down vote. And there you have it. Super Congress will have secret surveillance, secret Patriot Act, secret private armies, all those stories yet to come, as you see the theme. U.S. Constitution makes default illegal. Webster Tarpley of Tarpley.net and World Crisis Radio, what a real president would do on August 1st, 2011. And Tarpley writes it out like a speech. Meanwhile, Obama administration sells Chrysler shares to foreign companies. And who owns America? And the hint, one from blacklistednews.com, but also from allgov.com, is that it's not China. Most of U.S. debt is owed to U.S., us. It's one of the largest and certainly most powerful myths in American politics today that America's debt is in the hand of foreigners, primarily the Chinese. By repeatedly telling the American people that the U.S. national debt is controlled by China and other countries, politicians give themselves a potent weapon to stir the passions of constituents and leverage the lie for policy or political ends. If only people knew the truth, which is that nearly 70% of America's $14.3 trillion debt is held by America. According to Business Insider, Americans, from bankers to investors to government officials to ordinary citizens, control $9.8 trillion of the debt, or 68%. China has $1.16 trillion, or about 8%. Altogether, other countries possess $4.6 trillion of the U.S. debt. The bulk of the debt rests with a wide range of institutions and individuals, such as the Social Security Trust Fund, the Federal Reserve, households, state and local governments, private pension funds, and commercial banks. More on the story from Talking Points Memo, Business Insider, and flashbacks from allgov.com. And the rest of our EconoCrash updates. The looting of America. The Federal Reserve made $16 trillion in secret loans to their bankster friends, and the media, of course, remains silent. That also from blacklistednews.com. Obama passes the DREAM Act by executive memo, furthering along the North American Union as we play both ends against the middle. IMF CFR insider recruited by Obama White House, this latest crony to be White House Special Assistant to the President for International Economic Affairs, Caroline Atkinson, CFR's Roundtable on Global Economics, connected to the IMF and the World Bank. Change-a-looyah. William Blum's latest on KillingHope.org and also on Foreign Policy Journal, The Occult World of Economics. And records are set, I feel, every week as we do this show. More and more things we say, biggest ever, worst ever, record-setting. And generally not in good ways. Alabama County readies for the largest municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history. That is from Forbes, and as long as we're throwing in all of the things surrounding the debt ceiling, as you notice that this kind of mirrors the exact scenario of the original bailout in 2008, where it was a seamless transition between Bush to Barry, passing off the political football, scaring everyone in the Congress, threatening martial law. Look at Brad Sherman, whether it was figurative or literal. And it was Obama going to the new Congress as he was tipped to be the man, railroading through the bailouts. This is the same thing that we're going to see now as the charade of the 2012 elections sneaks up.
Well, not too far from D.C., you have a field of Republicans with an eye on the White House remaining wide open in Iowa just 3 weeks before the Ames straw poll ballot. Tim Pawlenty, Ron Paul, Michelle Bachmann, even Governor Chris Christie, who says he's not running, are in the key caucus state today. And that's where we find Steve Brown. He's also in Ames, Iowa, keeping an eye on all those running and all those, well, not, I guess not running, Steve.
Or in some cases almost running or theoretically running. But yes, the level of activity has exactly everything to do, a level of activity in Iowa, exactly everything to do with the straw poll, which comes up on the second Saturday of August. It's traditionally an early indicator of which organization, which campaign organization, really has the muscle to be able to move people in a caucus-like way that they're going to have to do coming up in February. Ron Paul's a name that you probably should watch out for. Some of the other Iowa campaigns note that Paul has been very active, but off of the radar. And while most candidates and campaigns try to dumb down expectations, saying, oh, we won't do that well, so that they can exceed expectations. Apparently, Ron Paul hasn't gotten that memo. Have a listen.
I wished I could say that I am the front runner and nobody's ahead of me and it's a shoe-in. But the truth is that we can do it and will do very, very well and hopefully come in first.
Fox News says Ron Paul's name you should probably watch out for. And we told you that 4.5 years ago on this show. Let's not get into all the Ron Paul 2012 political show. I suppose there's plenty of time for that, and I want to put it off as long as possible. So here's another record. Here's another high in polling. This from Rasmussen Reports. 46% of voters think most in Congress are corrupt. More on that from BlacklistedNews.com. And we close out the Obamasiah and Econocrash updates, debt ceiling, U.S. fate, with the first of two bits of satire that, of course, aren't like satire. They're so close to the truth. Social Security reform bill encourages Americans to live faster, die younger.
Congress today passed a landmark Social Security reform bill they estimate could save the troubled program billions by encouraging Americans to live faster and die younger. The so-called grab life by the balls bill includes provisions to cut the cost of cigarettes in half, outlaws helmets, and adjusts the CDC's recommended amount of sleep from 8 hours a night to when you're dead.
The most effective way to stem our out-of-control Social Security budget is for all Americans to go out early in a blaze of glory.
The bill's long-term initiatives, like repealing all gun laws and replacing train crossing warnings with signs encouraging motorists to speed up, are expected to save Americans millions annually by gradually reducing their average lifespan by 15 to 20 years. The bill's short-term initiatives aim to immediately cut current Social Security costs in half by replacing senior citizens' monthly checks with vouchers for grain alcohol, back alley tattoos, and extreme sports.
I got this coupon to motocross over a canyon. I guess I better do my part to help the deficit.
But some critics are not convinced the bill will be enough to save the program from bankruptcy.
We need a much more aggressive policy here, like my proposal to require all commercial airlines to do a barrel roll while coming in for a landing.
Are you kidding me? We need to privatize. The government has no right telling me who to raw dog and what to explode.
Supporters in Congress say that cost will be offset by the so-called pussy tax on products such as sweaters, vegetables, hand soap, and flu shots.
America, would you rather die old, broke, and forgotten, or die a motherfucking legend?
The new program follows in the footsteps of the Life is a Cartoon Medicare campaign, which encourages seniors to run full speed off of cliffs and smoke sticks of dynamite. Moving on, KFC has unveiled a new line of boneless employees.
Oh, geez. Oh, also on the pussy list is Netflix. Now, that reminds me of something comedian Doug Stanhope has said, is that we're always being told to, you know, live like there's no tomorrow. What they don't tell you is how on earth you're going to survive. Like, oh, I was counting on that dead tomorrow thing. Interestingly enough, Doug Stanhope, who is coming to town in this October, and you heard a little bit of his comedy on our most recent mixtape, number 10, American X, for the 4th of July. He has a brand new album that just came out about a month ago, and I bought it. As you should, with the artists that you enjoy, you should support them. His new album is called Oslo, Burning the Bridge to Nowhere. So again, like in so many other ways, the artists see the memes ahead of time and sometimes even set the stage, if you will. Massive attack on Oslo government buildings and youth camp kills 76. As we mentioned at the top of the show, we covered this story as it was unfolding last week on episode 226, but did not go into very much detail as we were already performing the show that had been produced. So yes, this is one of those stories that have massive implications and massive coverage, and there's no great way to try and break it all down on a two-hour show. So the easiest way was to just grab the Wikipedia entry on the 2011 Norway attacks, and I think this gives us the W5 pretty well, and we have an epic compilation of clips that will flesh out the story even more. The 2011 Norway attacks were a pair of terrorist attacks against the civilian population, the government, and a political summer camp in Norway on Friday, July 22, 2011. The first was a bomb explosion at the executive government quarter of Oslo, outside the office of Prime Minister Jens Stoltenberg and other government buildings. The explosion killed eight and wounded several others. The second attack occurred less than 2 hours later at a youth camp organized by the youth organization AUF of the Norwegian Labour Party on the island of Utøya. And I am skipping over mangling some of the other Norwegian names, but they are all linked up for you. Continuing. A gunman disguised as a policeman opened fire at the campers, killing 68 attendees, including personal friends of the Prime Minister and the stepbrother of Norway's Crown Princess, in a backlash against the alleged Islamification of Europe. The Norwegian Police Service arrested Anders Behring Breivik, a 32-year-old Norwegian man, for the mass shootings in Utøya and subsequently charged him with both attacks. The EU, NATO, and several countries around the world expressed their support for Norway and condemned the attacks. Down the Wikipedia entry, we can find hashtag possible accomplices. Several witnesses at the youth camp expressed doubt that there was only one shooter. The police have received descriptions of a second gunman and are currently working to confirm or deny the accuracy of this new information. Due to the uncertainty surrounding these witness descriptions and the chaotic nature of the events, the police have, as a matter of precaution, yet to make an official comment on the matter. Breivik has claimed that he acted alone and that he had no accomplices. On July 24th, six more people were arrested in Oslo in connection with the attacks and then released, as they are said to be no longer suspected of involvement. And then our updates came that confirmed or disproved some of the things we just mentioned for you. Let's get our Norway nightmare updates. And again, we'll just blast through these as headlines. They are laid out for you to do more research for yourself. And many of the sites are posting and hosting their own archive of information, such as Cryptogon.com. Attack on Oslo archive from Cryptogon.com. Oslo gunman claims he is a leading member of a refounded Knights Templar. And we will see this come back again. Lone Nut, Tea Party Freemason, Cop Terrorist, Kills Liberal Children in Norway? From DeadlineLive.info. Link between Breivik and Mossad? From Blacklisted News. Second man seized by special forces in Norway. Survivors tell police of attacks in two different areas on the island. That is from the Daily Mail. And as we were discussing this at work the other day with a few folks, just saying that this story contains all the essential ingredients of what we have come to know as a classic false flag terror event. Oslo police conducted a bombing exercise days before the terror blast, practicing the very thing in the very place that would happen just a few days later, miraculously. The drills. The number was originally in the 90s, but then 2 days ago, police lowered the death toll in the Norway attacks to 76. As Norway suspect appears calm at hearing, both those from VOAnews.com, and then we posted our second batch of updates, Tarpley.net, Tarpley on the Norway terror, more than one shooter on the island, Oslo police drilled bomb blast. Was it NATO's revenge for Norway's decision to stop bombing Libya? Knights Templar, Norway and Mexico, copycateffect.com has two posts getting into the Norway and the Mexico connections to, or flying the false flag of, quote-unquote, Knights Templars. More updates from copycateffect.com. Knights Templar invoked by Norway suspect and Mexican cartel to cloak horror, historian says. More on that from Fox. We also have Norway notes from VeteransToday.com and coverage of the Norwegian tragedy, jumping to conclusions, absurdist claims, and unanswered questions. Norwegian police unable to find link between Breivik and far right. Norway suspect denies guilt, and hence he did not act alone. In an update a few days later, Tuesday, I read it in the New York Times, so it has to be true. He denies guilt, and says he didn't act alone. And we also have a ton of videos and a ton of clips that we're just about to get into. Norway nightmare as scores killed in terror attacks. Attack revives domestic terror threat. Accused mass killer hints at conspirators. Norway's extra security scare as the nation mourns. And Breivik cited American bloggers and writers as the massive attack on Oslo government buildings and youth camp kills 76.
Tensions remain high in Oslo as residents still try to understand what happened and why. Tonight, police are continuing to question the suspect in the attacks. 32-year-old Anders Breivik, a Norwegian. National correspondent Jeff Glore is in Oslo with the latest.
The gunman seen from overhead in the middle of his rampage. Posing as a police officer, witnesses say he lured a large group together, telling them he was there to perform a routine terror check. Then, the firing. A sustained assault that police now say lasted for 90 minutes. Campers, 600 of them, a youth meeting of Norway's Labour Party, went any way they could. Some into the woods, others hit the water.
Just started swimming.
You started swimming, he was shooting?
Yeah, he came down. Yeah, I saw many dead people, and he was standing on the beach and, like, aiming for me and shooting, but they didn't hit me, luckily.
Nearby today, the wounded recover, including Adrian Precone, who played dead to stay alive. He was hit in the shoulder.
I was lying perfectly still, and someone fell down right in front of me, so I hid behind the dead person. I could hear him breathe, and I could hear his boots when he was walking close by.
Tragically, the firepower that accused shooter Anders Behring Breivik had and the time he was given to attack left a staggering number dead, some victims as young as 16.
When police got to this lake and approached the campground site, they say that Breivik surrendered immediately after they asked, finally firing no more shots.
But the campground massacre was only part of the plan. The explosion that rocked downtown Oslo, 60 miles south, went off 90 minutes before the island attack. Government buildings were the main target, though storefront windows hundreds of yards away were blown out as well. Seven died, a death toll that would have been much higher had many Norwegian workers not already taken off for the weekend. Breivik, it turns out, registered a farm-related business in eastern Norway, allowing him to order 6 tons of ammonium nitrate on May 4th, according to records from a fertilizer supply company. Last week, he opened a Twitter account, ominously posting just one quote. One person with a belief is equal to the force of 100,000 who have only interests. Tonight, Norway remains stunned.
The combination of the bomb explosion here with the shooting at the youth camp of the Labour Party, the Young Labour Party, that makes this really, really a serious attack.
The Prime Minister and royal family visited grieving relatives. Flags flew at half-staff. The army patrolled the streets in a city that just endured its worst peacetime attack in history.
Breivik is in custody here in Oslo tonight, and police say he has been talking at least a bit. His lawyer said tonight that Breivik believed his actions were, quote, atrocious, but also necessary. He's due in court on Monday. Russ?
Jeff, at this point, do we know anything about Breivik's motive?
Police have not commented specifically on motives, but we do know that he posted a series of angry messages online criticizing Norway's ruling Liberal Labour Party. And we also know that today the Conservative Party here confirmed that Breivik was a member of their youth party from 1999 to 2004.
Jeff Glore in Oslo, Norway.
The attack was a reminder that terrorism is not the sole province of Muslim extremists. For more on the domestic terror threat now, we turn to Bob Orr in Washington.
The attacks in Norway underscore a threat U.S. officials have been worrying about since Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols bombed an Oklahoma City federal building. Domestic terrorists present a lethal and often invisible danger. The most dangerous is the lone wolf, who evades detection as he maps his plot. Law enforcement knew little about James von Braun's white supremacist writings until after he shot up the Holocaust Museum and killed a security guard in 2009. Unabomber Ted Kaczynski lived anonymously for years in a Montana cabin as he mailed out bombs in his leftist manifesto. Domestic radical groups also span the political spectrum. 3 years ago, environmental terrorists torched an upscale Seattle neighborhood. And in 2010, 9 members of Michigan's Hutari militia were charged with conspiring to kill cops. So-called right-wing militants outnumber those on the left. But 10 years after 9/11, the greatest homegrown threat still comes from Islamist radicals, trained or inspired by Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists. Nidal Hassan, inspired by Anwar al-Awlaki, killed 13 soldiers at Fort Hood. Najibullah Zazi, schooled by Al-Qaeda bomb makers, plotted to blow up New York subways. And Faisal Shahzad, aided by the Pakistani Taliban, drove an SUV bomb into the heart of Times Square. In all, more than four dozen U.S. citizens have been charged in various jihadist plots in the past decade.
Now, some critics say in light of what happened in Norway, the U.S. should now focus more on right-wing radicals. But Homeland Security officials tell us they're meeting the threat exactly where it is. And for now, the emphasis remains, Bob, on Al-Qaeda.
The accused mass killer in the Oslo tragedy told authorities he was trying to call attention to what he called the threat of a Muslim takeover of Europe. Today, in the streets of Oslo, there was an enormous outpouring of grief and sympathy for the victims, and the killer's own father said he wished his son had committed suicide. Again tonight, Jeff Glore is in Oslo.
Anders Behring Breivik is apparently changing his story. After first insisting that last Friday's massacre was his work alone, police said Breivik hinted that two cells of extremists worked with him, both capable of more attacks. He was denied the open court hearing he wanted and ordered held for at least 8 weeks, the first four in solitary. While that may give him plenty of time to think, there is zero indication this 32-year-old, a self-proclaimed knight, is about to express any remorse. His radical propaganda video railing against immigrants and Muslims is chilling. His 1,500-page manifesto indicating he began planning his attacks all the way back in 2002 is exhaustively detailed, insisting he's not guilty of any crime because he was needed to send Europe back to the days of white Christian domination. From France, Breivik's father, who hasn't spoken to his son in years, said he wished Breivik had just killed himself after the onslaught. The bombing of government buildings in Oslo on Friday afternoon left eight dead. 90 minutes later, a youth campground shooting spree that lasted for an hour and a half. Officials today revised down the number of dead to 68, but it's still the worst shooting by a single gunman in modern times. Now, this country of 5 million comes together to say goodbye.
There was this enormous gathering in downtown Oslo today, all prompted at first by a single user on Facebook. There was supposed to be an official march through the streets, but police had to cancel that because so many people showed up, they couldn't handle the overflow.
The total crowd, 200,000, many carrying roses in remembrance.
Norway has made very clear they would like to get beyond this and not give Breivik any more of a platform. Bob?
So, Jeff, what about the punishment for this man?
Well, the maximum jail term that a judge can impose here in Norway is only 21 years, and that's got a lot of attention here. However, the state can potentially add to that in five-year increments if that person is deemed a threat to society. And we should say Breivik has said he expects to spend the rest of his life in prison.
And no death penalty, right?
No death penalty here in Norway.
We begin here in Norway, where I just got back from. A sea of flowers, flags, and candles continues to grow in central Oslo. But security concerns and false alarms are also affecting day-to-day life there this morning. Elizabeth Palmer is in London with the latest on that. Liz, good morning to you.
Morning, Jeff. Well, Norwegian police are fairly sure that the gunman, Anders Breivik, did act alone, as he claimed, but they can't be 100% sure, and that means that forces across the country remain on high alert.
Police briefly cleared part of Oslo's central train station this morning when somebody spotted an unattended suitcase. It turned out to be a false alarm. But this is a country on edge and still in mourning for the 76 victims of last Friday's massacre. The gunman, Anders Behring Breivik, is in jail in solitary confinement. But police scouring the farm he leased north of Oslo yesterday found and detonated a cache of explosives. Breivik used the farm as cover to order several tons of fertilizer, which police say was a main component of his Oslo bomb. Breivik's lawyer, Geir Lippestad, told reporters his client's actions were those of a madman.
This whole case is indicated he's insane.
Breivik intended his murderous rampage to start an anti-Islamic revolution in the Western world and claimed to be part of a network.
He says that he is a part of an international organization. It says that there are several cells throughout the Western world.
While police investigate those claims, Norwegians remain united in sorrow and in compassion.
There is no consensus in Norway that Breivik is insane.
In his 1,500-page manifesto, Anders Behring Breivik liberally quotes a small group of American bloggers and writers, men who are not subtle in what they say is the cultural threat of Islam. Moreover, Breivik copied multiple passages from the writings of the Unabomber, Ted Kaczynski, who, like Breivik, spent years writing and plotting his attacks. Yet, if a man in his 30s in a place like Oslo, Norway, can be so easily influenced by extremist American thinking, then is it only a matter of time before we see similar violent acts here on American soil? Evan Coleman is an NBC News terrorism analyst and a senior partner at Flashpoint Global Partners. And Evan, this young man was clearly influenced by American writings, at least according to what he says. How strong is this kind of anti-multiculturalism here in this country?
Well, look, I think it's fair to say that the multiculturalism, the anti-multiculturalism that we see in Europe is different than we see here. But at the same time, let's turn back the clock to last summer and let's remember the debate that's been taking place since then. We've seen protests here in New York outside the Park 51 complex saying that Islam is coming to take over America and that this can't be built. You've seen protests down in Murfreesboro where a mosque was attacked.
We've had Peter King's hearings on Islamophobia and the influence of Islam.
You had individuals showing up at political rallies in Arizona carrying assault rifles. Look, I mean, it's not that much of a jump from that to this. And I think this is the problem, is that in a society where we tolerate people showing up to political rallies armed, where we tolerate speech where people are saying others should be killed or they should be expelled solely because of their religious or personal orientation, political orientation, that's worrying. And the problem is that it's not just impacting people here in the U.S. There are others outside of the U.S. that are reading this, and that's what's dangerous. We have to be careful what we're saying here. You know, you look at the Republican presidential debates that have been taking place recently, Muslims are being treated like they're some kind of evil virus. And you only need to have a very small number of deluded people to see that and run with it, and then you have something terrible happens like this.
Lord forbid. Yeah. Going back to Breivik for a moment, it's believed that he visited London. Do we think that he may have been liaising with some kind of anti-multicultural terror cell in the UK?
Well, that's one of the questions. Of course, there is the EDL, the English Defence League, which is based in the UK. It's notorious for its position against multiculturalism and, frankly, its rather racist political positions.
In fact, the leader of the EDL was arrested and found guilty of violent assault at a football match today.
I mean, these are neo-Nazis. These are neo-fascists. And they're nothing better than that. And I think the question is, now that Breivik is saying that there are two other cells, is he just saying this for effect? Is he saying this to get more publicity? Or is he saying this because, in fact, there are other individuals out there? And, you know, to be honest, it doesn't even really matter, because if we think about this logically, there are other people in Europe who believe these things, and there are other people who are willing to be moved to acts of violence.
The Norwegian authorities don't have a great deal of experience in terms of dealing with this kind of an individual. He was suggesting or implying that he had collaborators. Yeah. How much of a weakness is the security system in Norway?
Well, look, Norway is a small country. It's very peaceful. This is a police force that I think owns one helicopter. They're not used to dealing with hostage situations and armed gunmen and terrorist attacks on a daily basis. They are really dependent on their allies, including the United States, to help provide them with the intelligence and insight to see these things coming. Here you had someone from inside of Norwegian society who went on a rampage, and unfortunately, I mean, in as much as it would be wonderful to say there was some way of stopping him, I just don't know if there was, because the reality is that even in this country, with all the resources that we've dedicated towards fighting terrorism, I don't think anyone could make you the promise that a lone wolf wouldn't get up tomorrow and just do this. I mean, let's not forget, somebody got in an airplane, packed it full of gasoline, and crashed it into an IRS building in Texas, and nobody saw that coming. So if someone is capable of that, then someone is capable of this. And it's a warning sign, and it's something we should take as a moment of self-reflection to make sure that there aren't people like this here. And if there are, that we're watching them. We make sure that there isn't somebody else writing a 1,500-page manifesto about murdering innocent people.
Indeed.
Yeah.
We should be careful about what we say in political rallies, as you
yes.
were saying earlier.
Yes.
Evan Coleman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There is a lot of propaganda to parse in that epic compilation of clips related to the Norway nightmare. So many things in there all connect to 9/11, homegrown terror, Oklahoma City, lone wolf. And it's all ultimately related to the engineered controlled demolition of our economy, setting everything up to when you lose it because you've lost everything because of a rigged system you mistakenly believed in, but it's not your fault. you're probably going to get mad, and they're preparing for that. So there's so many interesting angles, the Knights Templar angle, the occult copycat effect, the second gunman, all the other parts I would love to get into, all the minutiae, but we don't have time. Let's get our other related murder and mayhem updates. Court won't bar forced medication of Tucson suspect. A federal appeals court has refused to bar prison officials from forcibly administering a psychotropic drug to Jared Lee Loughner, the suspect in a shooting rampage that left six people dead in Tucson. Judges from the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit last Friday denied an emergency motion on the medication from defense lawyers. They also rejected the lawyer's request for daily reports about Mr. Loughner's condition at a federal prison facility in Springfield, Missouri. Jared Loughner can be forcibly medicated, court rules. Woman's hanging investigated in Coronado, California. That's from USAtoday.com, and that's all that we have on the Medicis murders that we've covered on the two previous episodes. Boy falls down the stairs. Girlfriend found mysteriously naked, bound, gagged, hung. Then the boy dies in the hospital. All related to big pharma, big money, big mansions in creepy California. But back here to the Wilding Pacific Northwest, 12 injured in mass shooting at Kent, Washington, lowrider car show.
Hearing get down, and...
Shots ring out and chaos erupts as a lowrider car show turns into a crime scene. The crime scene is so large, police say they have their hands full. What they don't have right now are the suspects responsible for the crime.
11 people were injured, but police say it is possible more victims will show up at nearby hospitals. We have Team 4 coverage of the car show chaos. Jennifer Kim is at Harborview Medical Center, where she spoke to the friends and family of the recovering victims.
But we begin with Como 4's Lindsay Cohen, who is the first reporter on the scene in Kent.
Well, John and David, that is a scene here that they are just starting to clean up now, about 7 hours after that first gunshot rang out. Nearly a dozen people injured, even more frightened by what they witnessed at this shopping center.
The police tape is scattered in all directions, like a pinwheel spinning every which way.
Some guy popped two in the air and started shooting around to everyone.
Witnesses say the bullets likewise went everywhere.
And then I heard pop, 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 pop.
When a car show descended into chaos.
They were pointing in the air, and all of a sudden they were pointing at people and kids, and kids were falling, and they were running and everything, and it was crazy.
When the running stopped, 11 people were hit.
Because I went behind a car, and I didn't come out till like they stopped shooting.
A parking lot went from a party to a ghost town. Bottles broken, trash scattered, shell casings numbering more than two dozen.
First shot, everybody dropped, and everybody started dragging their kids on the floor, you know, for them not to get hit.
The plaza had been filled with kids and families at the La Raza Lowrider car show and concert. One witness believes more than 200 people were here when police say a fight broke out. The shooting started and didn't stop.
I felt a bullet go by my leg, and my daughter and my mom got down on the ground. The guy next to her got shot in his leg. It was just like he was just shooting everywhere.
During the shooting, nearby businesses locked their doors. Employees ducked for cover. A woman jumped on her 3-year-old granddaughter to protect her.
And then I heard the bullets, and everybody started scattering and saying, "Run!" So then I threw her down on the pavement and got on top of her.
Tonight, the pavement is crawling with police, who must figure out how a car show ended in anarchy, sending at least 11 people to the hospital.
So that was the La Raza car show in Kent, Washington. And another story that I don't have linked up yet was Obama Saya speaking to a La Raza meeting, talking about how he wishes he could rule like a dictator more. To wild applause. But back to the murder and mayhem. Video of lethal injection reopens questions on the privacy of executions as Andrew Grant DeYoung died by lethal injection in a prison in Jackson, Georgia. Two Thursday nights ago, a video camera watched silently. For decades in the U.S., what goes on inside the execution chamber has been largely shrouded from public view, glimpsed only through the accounts of journalists and other witnesses. But the video recording of Mr. DeYoung's death, the first since 92, has once again raised the possibility that executions might be made available for all to see. In the process, it has reignited a widespread debate about how bright a light a candle to shine on one of the most secretive corners of the criminal justice system. The DeYoung video stirs debate of privacy of executions in the U.S. That is from the New York Times. Jarrett Peterson, Olympic medalist, commits suicide at the age of 29. Yankee pitcher Hideki Arabu commits suicide at the age of 42, which apparently they referenced in the last episode of Seinfeld with the fake George Steinbrenner. And another, when animals attack, teens recovering after Alaska bear attack. More on that from CNN. And another story of dead alive that we've been following over the last few weeks. This from WHEC.com. South African man wakes up in morgue refrigerator. After 21 hours, woke up and started yelling for help, and the workers there ran away scared because they thought it was a ghost. And his first words were, "How did I get here?" Texas gunman kills five and himself at a North Texas roller rink. That happening just on the heels of the Norway nightmare. And this has been all our other related murder and mayhem updates posted along with the Norway nightmare, the massive attack on Oslo. And we close with an odd bit of mayhem and something we've touched on a few times throughout Media Monarchy, and that is cryogenics. And now the father of cryogenics, Robert Wettinger, frozen along his first and second wives.
Pioneer in cryogenics, the idea that people should be frozen after death so they can be revived in the future, died this week at the age of 92. Now he is on ice, and ABC's Bob Woodruff is here with an inside look at this man and his controversial movement.
Yeah, and he's on ice already. His name is Robert Edinger, who was a big believer that you can actually come back to life as long as you freeze your body and your brain immediately after you die. And he did exactly that.
A legend in his own time.
When you hear the word cryonics or cryogenics, you might think of Austin Powers.
Where am I?
You've been cryogenic and frozen for 30 years.
Walt Disney or Ted Williams.
Ted Williams!
The baseball icon who was famously frozen after he died with the hope that someday in the future advances in science and technology can bring him back to life. It's a movement founded in the 1960s by this man, Robert Edinger. Inspired by a science fiction story he read, he founded the Cryonics Institute in this nondescript office building in Clinton Township, Michigan. Inside, over 100 people float inside giant bottles filled with nitrogen at temperatures colder than negative 130 degrees Celsius, hoping one day in the future some doctor will revive them. Now, the pioneer of cryonics has joined them as patient 106.
This is our temporary cooling box. My father's in this box right now.
Edinger died last week and now rests here, peacefully, next to his mother, Rhea, his first wife, Elaine, and his second wife, May.
My father's intention was that he and his family and his friends get a chance to live longer and to take advantage of the promise of future technology. He believed, like a lot of people do, that in the future we're going to have dramatically greater medical technology. And the question is, how do you get them from here to there? And cryonics is kind of an ambulance to the future.
And as the saying goes, the apples don't fall far from the tree.
I intended to do this as well. My wife does. And I'm very happy that we were able to do this for my father.
For about $30,000, you can too. Currently, there are over 200 people in frozen state at cryonic centers in the U.S. Some 2,000 have signed up for it. Scientists are freezing endangered animal species at this virtual frozen zoo in Louisiana.
We have gorillas and rhinos, tigers, lions. They're frozen in little tiny straws.
And people are also freezing their pets. And then there's the debate. Freeze the whole body or just the head? It even had the Golden Girls baffled.
How can you still be alive? You have to be 200 by now.
No, I died a long time ago. I had my head frozen.
Yeah, but how did you get a body so fast? You didn't tip the guy?
The controversy and spooky science did little to dissuade Edinger from selling the dream and little to prevent ordinary Americans from buying into the cryogenic craze.
I don't want to die.
Robin Hansen, an economics professor at George Mason University, is signed up to go to the Alcor Life Extension Foundation in Arizona, the same facility as Ted Williams when he passes on.
Like most medical technologies, this is a chance to live a little longer. It's not a guarantee. It doesn't mean I believe that it's sure to work or even that it's likely to work. But I think the chance of it working is high enough to be worth the cost.
But his wife, Peggy, doesn't buy it. In fact, she gave us the cold shoulder when we asked her to talk to us about it, calling into question that little phrase, "till death do us part."
My wife and I don't have to discuss this. We don't have to talk about it. unless somebody else brings the subject up. Basically, we don't talk about it, and we have our marriage continue on by setting the issue aside.
While he waits for his wife's objections to thaw out, for now, Hansen's dilemma is when he'll want to come back from the dead.
Do I want them to bring me back as soon as they have a chance, or do I want them to wait a while until they're really sure they can bring me back? I think I want them to try to bring me back as soon as possible.
Now, of course, the majority of people think this is all just weird science, it will never work, but David Ettinger actually told his father's legacy will be vindicated one day, and when the science catches up with his dad's idea from 30 years ago, his father will be back to tell us all, I told you so.
And that would be some moment, but I love this whole idea, Bob. Okay, so $30,000 for the whole body, but there's also a discount option?
That's for the entire body and the head. If you want to save some money, you can just have your head frozen, not along with your body. You know, my wife is so cheap, I think I'm only going to get my head.
No.
I don't want to give Allie any ideas. Bob, thanks very much.
Now, you may recall, let's throw the flashback for you, to October 3rd, 2009 on MediaMonarchy.com, Ted Williams' severed head abused in cryonics facility. And that was the way we were closing out all our related murder and mayhem updates. But as we shift to some of the other sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom, we will still find remnants of the Norway nightmare on holyhexes.com. I got my man Alan working on holyhexes.com now, too. Our main extra writer and editor on Cyberspace War is now authored up on holyhexes.com. If anyone else would like to get involved, we could use your help. MediaMonarchy@gmail.com to get involved in posting stories. The Knight Templar 2083. The Manifesto, the movie, the Declaration of Independence, it's all broken down. Is it a... It's a rhetorical question. A divide-and-conquer psychological operation, just like we see on the front of the breaking news right now. Calls pour in as debt stalemate continues. The masses spurred to telephone activism, as we're here doing internet activism. The other post on holyhexes.com, Anders Breivik manufactured Patsy, getting into the connections of yet another three-named lone gunman. Tying in reports from Paul Joseph Watson and Wade Madsen and Russia Today and so many other connections. Furthermore, on holyhexes.com, Lord Randolph Spencer Churchill, the ringleader of the Jack the Ripper murders. A fascinating bit of history mystery for you. But lastly on holyhexes.com is the 728 Pop Culture News Purge Favor Perry Trial and Bieber. And we begin from allgov.com as we discover, shockingly, that Homeland Security grants are rigged to favor religious groups. Nonprofits can seek financial assistance from DHS for buttressing their operations against terror attacks, but religious-oriented groups have the best shot of receiving the funding from the Urban Areas Security Initiative Nonprofit Security Grant Program. And you can learn more on this from pogo.org and get the PDF from FEMA. Meet the Radical Evangelical Army behind Rick Perry. That's on BusinessInsider.com. And an op-ed on the Belief blog from CNN on why evangelicals should stop evangelizing. First academic journal on atheism and secularism and non-religion to debut. And the Warren Jeffs trial. It's time for everything to come out. Evidence will be shocking in offshoot Mormon polygamist's trial. Those stories from the Salt Lake Tribune, BeliefNet, and the update from the Deutsche Press Agency. Polygamist leader fires lawyers at the start of trial. The leader of a breakaway sect of polygamist Mormons went on trial Thursday in Texas on sexual assault and bigamy charges stemming from his marriage to two girls, ages 12 and 14. At the start of the trial, state court judge Barbara Walther granted the request of Warren Jeffs to represent himself, but declined any delay in the start of the trial. Jeffs, 55, leader of the breakaway sect of the Mormon Church, his group, the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, promotes polygamy and is thought to number some 10,000 members. I believe I mentioned it before, but I always get a little extra excited when people represent themselves. Judge chops circumcision ban from the San Francisco ballot. Wienergate, Wiener meme continues. More on that again from the Deutsche Press Agency. And our last note was originally posted to the BeliefNet, but when I went back for it and was trying to post it up, they had disappeared it for some reason. So we have posted up the cache for you from the Daily Mail, but it isn't even apparently want to load. But if you'd like to, you can see a nice picture of Justin Bieber and his dad showing off their matching Yeshua tattoos. That's all for HolyHexes.com, and we'll hop back to Media Monarchy to reference two of our favorite alternative media outlets, like PeaceRevolution.org, episode 36, The Global Ruling Class, getting into David Rothkopf's book, Superclass, The Global Power Elite and the World They Are Creating, and the work of Lewis Lapham, who you may know has given some lip service to questioning 9/11, has his own Lapham's quarterly literary journal, and of course is also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. This episode gets further into the foundation-funded world, Carnegie Endowment, Ford Foundation, Rockefeller, Carnegie, Superclass, Power Elite, Foundations and Their Influence, and so very, very much more on episode 36, The Global Ruling Class, from PeaceRevolution.org. But back here in Portland on KXL 101.1 FM, my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org, live every weeknight, 9 to midnight. The listen links and the subscription to the podcast links are posted up for you. EMP Dominoes, First Throes of the Soft War, Godwin, Fallen Angels of the Death's Head, Swath of the Dragon's Tail, The Occluded People's Front, and one special bit from GroundZeroMedia.org. Clyde Lewis takes on KXL. Should Glenn Beck be fired? And I believe this connects to Glenn Beck saying something about the camp that Breivik and his unindicted co-conspirators and second gunmen perhaps were involved in. Glenn Beck called it some kind of Hitler youth camp. So everybody's all rabble-rabble about that. I believe at the very same moment, Glenn Beck is planning some kind of, like, summer camp thing for his cronies. So, what's the diff? We now move to cyberspacewar.com and continue along with the latest from GroundZeroMedia.org, where Kexburg was revisited on Ground Zero with an interview with Stan Gordon, getting into objects in the woods, Kexburg, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Nazi-era German scientists, and so very much more. Connected also to this is another post getting into the modern ufology era dawning with the 1947 Maury Island and Kenneth Arnold sightings, coming right here to Mount Rainier in Washington, June 21st, 1947, the year so many things kicked off. And we also get into some links of an old 1950 Murrow interview of Arnold and more recent interviews from Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org talking to authors Ken Thomas and Bill Burns. We also have some links to amazing free ufology documentaries, a smorgasbord, if you will, Out of the Blue, Phoenix Lights, Hard Evidence, and even Dan Aykroyd weighing in on his opinion of UFOs, and I believe that's also on Netflix as well. Blue Lightning, a new esoteric nuclear reaction. Freelance journalist Yoichi Shimatsu reports on a new esoteric form of nuclear reaction called Blue Lightning in a recent article, Why Underground Entombment at Fukushima Daiichi Won't Work. But the question is, would borax work? Lastly, on cyberspacewar.com is the 728 DEF CON News Purge, Black Ops, Blacklist, and hashtag Fuck You, Washington. Murdoch's Fox ran Black Ops Department, a former executive claims. And yes, we are still following the hashtag phone hacking story, as we noted last week, that if they hacked 9/11 victims, Fox News is finished. British Telecom ordered to blacklist Usenet search engine. More on that from ArsTechnica.com. And Blacklisted News asking the question, why did the director of U.S. cybersecurity arm of the Department of Homeland Security abruptly resign? Russia Today thinks Anonymous got that cyber czar to resign, essentially showing he's a useless fool and can't stop all of these waves of virtual flag terrorism. LulzSec spokesman arrest could incite more cyber attacks. That's from ZDNet.com. And what if it's not even the guy? FBI working from a list of the top 1,000 protesters in anonymous raids helping on their busts. And I saw it start to break out last weekend. And it is still going. So let's break down quickly how this got started with talking to the man that started it, Jeff Jarvis, on the hashtag Fuck You Washington.
In his speech to the nation last night, President Obama said the entire world is watching this debt ceiling debate and added it looks as though the whole world is tweeting about it, too. If you do a little perusing of Twitter, CBS News national correspondent Jim Axelrod reports on the growing outrage now over the stalemate in Washington.
So this past Saturday night, Jeff Jarvis had just about enough.
I'm watching the evening news. I'm seeing the latest on the debt crisis. I'm getting mad. I go back to Twitter.
A journalism professor with 75,000 Twitter followers, Jarvis put out a message in plain, though off-color, English.
So I said, hey, Washington, it's our economy and our money, so f*** you.
Like Howard Beale, the angry anchorman from the 1976 movie Network,
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Jarvis touched a nerve of outrage. People took the tweet and ran with their own specifics. F*** you, Washington, for having the compromising skills of a three-year-old, or for enslaving all future generations with the largest debt in human history. There were 64,000 tweets on Monday alone.
One tweeter, Jeff Howe, said there was a large pile of dry tinder, and that all I did was throw a match on it. And people were mad about Washington, they're mad about this current so-called crisis, and they just wanted to get it off their chest.
In the latest CBS News poll, 79% of Americans are angry or dissatisfied with Washington. More blame Republicans than the president, and its outrage spreading beyond U.S. borders.
The biggest threat to the world financial system comes from a few right-wing nutters in the American Congress.
Modern technology has clearly made it easier than ever for people to express themselves.
And the beauty of this is that you can hear the voice of the country, not mediated by media or by government or anybody else. Real people were talking and saying what they wish government would do that it's not doing.
Even if you still have to read all about it. Jim Axelrod, CBS News, New York.
And as for what is at stake here, one bipartisan think tank projects the Treasury will collect $172 billion in revenue in August, which is far short of the $306 billion in payments the government is scheduled to make in August.
On and around the cyberspace war news purge, 4.5 million will cut the TV cord this year, 12 million will cut it by 2015, and if you haven't done it, good Lord, why haven't you? I can't actually remember the last time I've had any kind of cable television or home phone, for that matter. PayPal users mistakenly charged as much as $4,000 for the latest Mac OS X Lion, which we reported for you last week, seemed to be an iPad with a keyboard attached, or as Cryptogon.com called it, just the coming vending machine. Russia to deorbit the International Space Station, the ISS to crash into the ocean in 2020. And also, Russian telescope launch pulls National Space Program out of black hole. So as the U.S. is calling it quits, Russia, as we again reported for you last week, the glorious era of Soyuz begins. China reportedly developing EMP weapons. That's from the UPI. And NASA readies Juno for a trip to Jupiter. Boeing's Millennium Falcon floats using Nazi technology. And that is the headline from Danger Room. As you should know, Operation Paperclip, we brought Nazi scientists over to help us in so many ways. You know, because they had learned so many things from us about eugenics. You know, they wanted to share the wealth with some of the technological advances. And our last note on cyberspacewar.com, on the 728 DEF CON Black Ops Blacklist and hashtag fuck you Washington, DHS fears modified Stuxnet could attack U.S. infrastructure. And if you check out this story on Threat Level and scroll down, you may see a comment from Media Monarchy that says, well, the monster destroyed Dr. Frankenstein, so maybe U.S. Real shouldn't have created Stuxnet. And we now move to foodworldorder.com, where there's only two posts. The first is the July 28th binge and purge list of headlines, land grab, evil ingredients, and food documentaries as Japan asks, where's the nuclear beef? Japan's food chain threat multiplies as radiation spreads. But back here in the homeland, feds to grab land for Homeland Security Forces, moral net from farmwars.info. Food safety news asking the question, who put McDonald's in charge of kids' health? Well, as we saw last week with Michelle Obama talking about how great Walmart is with their organic food, we see who puts them in charge. The fools you vote in bring in their fool friends from the quote-unquote private sector, and it's a revolving door, and we get our asses kicked out of it every single time in the fake political paradigm. Ranks of hungry children swell, worrying doctors. That's from the Boston Globe. What's really in the food? The A to Z of the food industry's most evil ingredients. That's a handy-dandy bit from naturalnews.com, starting with acrylamides and ending with yeast extract and so many in between. Read the disgruntled Whole Foods employee's epic resignation letter about the faux hippie Walmart that works on some levels and fails on so many, many other levels. Wall Street food analyst connects GMOs with food allergies. That's from Food Freedom. Tri-State Beef recalls 228 plus thousand pounds of beef due to E. coli. A Brazilian woman finds a condom in a tomato can. And the Speakeasy reporting on a new Feast of Food documentaries that I did tweet out on twitter.com/NavigateNetflix. And speaking of flicks, I hope to see very soon the shock documentary, so-called by GMWatch.org, on WWF and the industry. That would be the World Wildlife Fund and the industry they are connected to, the silence of the panda. Lastly, on this 728 binge and purge, Got Milk ad pulled after criticism.
Don't cry over spilled milk, or so the saying goes. The latest Got Milk campaign created quite a spill, and critics aren't keeping quiet. WRC explains.
A new ad campaign from Milk has sparked so much criticism that the company has removed a website for their product. The website, everythingidoiswrong.org, was an advertisement for Milk from the California Milk Processors Board. It promoted milk as a way to lessen the effects of PMS and how men can deal with women who have PMS.
While the ads generated chuckles from some, others felt the ads were sexist. WTAE shows what all the fuss is about.
They show a couple of guys holding milk cartons with captions like, I'm sorry, I listened to what you said and not what you meant. And at the bottom it says, milk can help reduce the symptoms of PMS. Nutritionalists say that they're not even aware of any studies that show calcium could reduce PMS.
A Mother Nature Network blogger says she's sure the people at California Processors Milk Board thought the ads were hilarious and thought-provoking. But when it comes to appealing to buyers, who has the last laugh? The rest of us found the ads to be in incredibly poor taste. I mean, really, what were they thinking? Did they forget who does the shopping? Why insult the very people that you want to buy your product? The campaign launched July 11th and lasted just 10 days before the milk company pulled the plug. Or did it? KDFW reports producers don't see the backlash as problematic.
Well, producers say their ads
have served their purpose.
Yeah, because women got so angry at these ads, and everyone was talking about it.
Yep.
But I feel like now that they pulled the ads, job well done.
Oh, good.
Ladies, women win.
Yeah, fill up that glass one more time.
MSNBC reports milk producers are saying the glass is half full. Instead of abandoning the campaign completely, the milk producers are extending it by seeking to capitalize on the controversy surrounding it. They've put up a new website titled Got Discussion, featuring pro and con views and inviting people to join the discussion. An open discussion may have led to the negative response in the first place. A New York Times blogger says the whole incident is indicative of the pitfalls in the age of social media to producing ads that seek to be noticed by being daring, provocative, or shocking. The ability of consumers to quickly gather on websites like Facebook and Twitter and share their opinions means that it is becoming harder for marketers to walk that fine line between getting noticed and getting berated. For Newsy, I'm Anna Compain-Romero. Multiple sources, the real story.
Finally, on foodworldorder.com, an interesting piece from the New York Times. Bad food? Tax it and subsidize vegetables. Asking the question, what will it take to get Americans to change eating habits? That's everything from the other sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom, Holy Hexes, Cyberspace War, and Food World Order. And here we are in the final half hour of this episode 227 for July 29th, 2011. And I'll remind you, my name's James Evan Blotto, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. And we reached the 728 news purge, back to black. Buckle up. 9/11 updates. Book review of Among the Truthers, a journey through America's growing conspiracist underground. A massive breakdown of this book from Jonathan Kay on 911blogger.com. The 9/11 phone hacking. Families to meet with U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder. That's from The Guardian. And 911blogger.com again reporting WTC expert witness Danny Jawinko has died in a car crash. Lost but not found. The $2.3 trillion still missing at the Pentagon. Not enough evidence to link 9/11 and cancer, report finds. And finally, Bush explains 9/11 reaction in an upcoming National Geographic interview to be run on the approaching 10th anniversary of the event that changed everything. He didn't want to scare the kids. And our last bit of 9/11 updates. WTC cross lowered into its new home as atheists sue over the cross in the museum.
Controversy is building over a huge piece of what will be the September 11th Memorial and Museum. The American Atheist Organization does not want a huge steel cross to be part of the museum. The huge cross is made of intersecting beams found in an upright position after the dust has settled. The lawsuit filed charges that no other religion or philosophies will be honored in the same way at the Memorial and Museum.
It became a symbol of hope amid the destruction of the 9/11 attacks. In a solemn ceremony, the mangled cross of World Trade Center's steel was moved to the September 11th Memorial and Museum. The steel was discovered in that shape in what was then known as the pit. Recovery workers used to gather at the foot of the cross for Sunday Mass.
I'm tearing up because this day that came, many, many who were part of that community would have wanted to see it.
Now Rhonda and other volunteers from that time wear a replica of the cross around their necks.
For me, it was a reminder that God is always here and always with us, no matter what.
Father Brian Jordan, who blessed the cross in the days after the attacks, blessed it again on Saturday. Then the cross was lowered inside its new permanent home, one of several large items that have been placed there in recent days, so the museum's roof can be built over them.
Over the last decade, the cross has been moved from the World Trade Center site to a few different locations, including here at St. Peter's Church, where it arrived in 2006.
The president of the 9/11 Memorial and Museum says its new home will serve to highlight the toil and sacrifice of so many in the days after the attacks.
The $400 million that we've raised, the thousands of workers working on it, it's not just to finish the Memorial and the Museum. The most important thing is to open it so people can come pay their respects and visit.
The 9/11 Museum is scheduled to open in 2012, a year after the memorial, which is set to open on the 10th anniversary of the attacks. In Lower Manhattan, Tatiana Anderson, New York One.
Continuing the news purge on 2 hour BioWars and EnviroHealth updates, radiation in Japan and how the brainwashing was done in Fukushima. teacher muzzled on radiation risks for school kids. That's from Bloomberg. Meanwhile, a strong earthquake jolted northeast Japan. No damage reported. New study on the Aum Shinrikyo's biological chemical programs. That's from Homeland Security Watch. And South Korean scientists create a glowing dog. That's from Reuters. Oldest bird, Archaeopteryx, knocked off its perch in a controversial new study. It may have been just another feathered dinosaur. DHS cancels the $230 million radiation detection program. Drug companies stay away from vaccine that fights cocaine addiction, while FDA considering relaxing rules against scientists receiving money from drug companies. The gang and the government, there's no difference. FDA finds U.S. drug research firm faked documents. That is from Reuters. National Research Council discusses risk assessment for the Fort Detrick bio facility. Green agenda has parallels with excesses of communism. Of course, that is the Czech president railing against the fraud of man-made global warming, anthropogenic global warming. So how about this one? New NASA data blows gaping hole in global warming alarmism. Posted on Yahoo. So maybe that's why nation's climatologists are exhibiting strange behavior.
Now, let's look into a somewhat perplexing story from the world of science. People are reporting that climatologists around the country have been behaving very strangely recently. Let's go to Andrea Bennett in Cambridge, Massachusetts for more. Hello, Andrea. What's going on?
Well, Brooke, we just don't know. Something definitely seems to have spooked the climatologists here. They've been pacing around, gesticulating wildly and making a lot of strange noises.
Well, I hate to see them all agitated, but these little professors sure do look funny flailing their skinny little weak arms and pushing their glasses back up.
Yes, I suppose.
And what is the chattering sound that they're making, Andrea? Can we listen to a little more of that?
Well, it's similar to their normal vocalizations, but about a third faster and twice as loud.
When sea level does cross a threshold, it's very difficult to reverse that rise.
So again, we're not sure why, but it's definitely not the first time we've witnessed this sort of behavior among various different types of scientists.
Now, Andrea, don't some people believe that scientists can actually sense danger coming? Do you think that that might have something to do with the way that they're acting?
Well, there are those who believe that or think scientists can tell when someone has cancer or is going to die, but of course, other people think that's pretty silly.
Now, as far as climatologists there in Cambridge, I understand that they've actually been approaching humans. Is that right?
That is. Now, they're usually very timid, but one came right up to me today. I am not lying. He was this close and handed me this.
Amazing. Well, maybe someday we'll know what all this jumping around is all about. Thanks so much, Andrea.
You bet.
Fantastic satire while still giving credence to the man-made global warming fraud. Drug war updates. Guns from U.S. sting found at Mexican crime scenes. Yes, many, many times we will remind you of Operation Fast and Furious and Gun Runner. That from Reuters. U.S. returns 33 Mexican troops who strayed into Texas. That's from Yahoo again. And the Knights Templar, Mexico's newest drug cartel? As normal.org reports that the stupid stoner myth has gone up in smoke. Geopolitics, top Libyan rebel commander killed amid spying allegations. Mubarak trial carries many uncertainties for a nervous Egypt. Violence breaks out in Somali capital as rebels block aid. And Mossad spy ring unearthed because of Christchurch earthquake. That is from The Telegraph, and that's more on what we reported for you last week. An Israeli found in the rubble of the Christchurch, New Zealand earthquake had 5 passports. History Mystery Notes found the last bugs of the Nixon White House. That's from Danger Room. American Civil War anniversary pictures from the Deutsche Press Agency. Federal judge blocks the DOJ's attempt to backtrack Ivan's admissions, saying, no, you wanted to say that he probably didn't act alone. Classified report, Russia tied to blast at U.S. Embassy last year, and a flashback, SPLC and FBI linked to OKC, even more important in the wake of the Norway nightmare. Our police state updates again, Quartzsite, Arizona, blueprint for a police state takeover. More on this fascinatingly important and interesting story from theintelhub.com. As they also report black helicopters seen in multiple states as the Pentagon prepares to deploy those 20,000 troops in the continental United States this year that they mentioned to you last year. Military training exercises to take place in and around Boston, and in secret, a Senate panel may re-up vast surveillance dragnet. That's from Danger Room, and so is this. Bill would force Intel chief to reveal secret Patriot Act. And again, that's our Oregon Senator Ron Wyden. NSA admits it tracks Americans via cell phones. Holy crap, stop the presses. And you can't have it, but you can get maybe a crappier, modified version of it, but don't you really always want to have the police state toys that our officer friendlies have? Such as law enforcement to use iPhone face scanner app.
Some crime-fighting technology for the future raising privacy concerns right now. We're talking about a new facial recognition device. Dozens of law enforcement agencies nationwide are about to start using this thing as early as September. The device is attached to iPhones, allowing officers to take pictures of people's faces, even scan their irises, and then check for matches in a criminal database. Jamie Colby is in our New York City newsroom with a look at it. Jamie?
Hey, John, this is pretty cool stuff, very CSI. It's called Morris. It's a handheld biometric device, and it can actually recognize people based on their eyes, their face, even their fingerprints. It connects to a smartphone, as you mentioned, and that allows an officer to snap a picture of someone's face from up to 5 feet away or scan an iris in their eye from up to 6 inches away, and then they can do an immediate search to see if there's a match with a database that's been building of people with criminal records. The database actually growing for about 4 years now, and it's been installed in 47 states. The actual handheld system costs $3,000.
You don't need to know their name, the date of birth, the social security number. You don't need to know anything. You simply need to ask them, look in the camera, and in a matter of seconds, the true identity and all of their criminal record comes back.
And a game changer. And what it's going to allow us to do is it's going to allow us to know with a great level of certainty, number one, who it is that we're taking in when we book them in, and who it is on the other end of that sentence that we're releasing.
A game changer, says the sheriff. Well, courts have yet to rule on the innovation, but privacy advocates argue that using these scans can actually amount to an illegal search without a warrant.
We think that there should be some rules and regulations in place that govern exactly how the police use these things so that they can be used when it's appropriate, when the police have probable cause that, you know, you have committed a crime, but that they don't start using them all over the place as sort of a generalized surveillance tool.
Yeah, so we'll have to wait to see once they're implemented and they're tested. But one feature of the handheld device that may calm these privacy concerns, once the recognition data is either matched or it's cleared, no record of the images or identifying information is stored. And John, you know, with the TSA and all those scanners, that was a big concern of people and also for some of the privacy advocates. John?
Yeah, and some of our chatters are wondering when this is going to hit the consumer market. You know, can I buy one of these things and scan anybody I want to?
You know what? Interesting. Facebook actually is looking at it to help you tag photos better, and Google also to allow you to take a picture of someone and do an immediate Google search to get any other information on them. So your chatters are up to speed, John.
Yeah, that is a brave new world. Jamie Colby, thank you.
It is a brave new world, my friends. Law enforcement to use iPhone face scanner app. And, of course, that is biometrics. And, of course, Facebook and Google are already doing it. Face.com is doing it. And there is, unfortunately, a biometrics facility in West Virginia. But our last few police state updates. TSA readying new behavior detection plan for airport checkpoints. That's from Politico. Meanwhile, not to be outdone, of course, we are Europe Junior, but across the pond, Heathrow to get new facial recognition scanners. That's from The Register. And Reuters reporting an off-duty TSA agent accused of flashing badge at slow driver. And we can only, unfortunately, speculate that it was much worse than that. Our last note of police state updates is in the breaking news on the front of Google right now. AWOL soldier shouts the name of alleged Fort Hood shooter in court. Oh, it gets more interesting by the moment, but let's get the clip. Soldier arrested in jihadist Fort Hood plot.
All right, now we're piecing together what we're learning out of Texas. The Fox News alert now with details on a possible plot to attack Fort Hood.
That's the same Texas Post where a gunman carried out a massacre 2 years ago. And just like then, the suspect wears a military uniform, and there might be more than one. Jennifer Griffin, live at the Pentagon. I know you've been working on this for hours now. What can we report, Jennifer?
Well, Bill, what I can tell you from law enforcement and Army sources that Nasser Abdo, a private from Fort Campbell, Kentucky, who had gone AWOL July 4th weekend, was basically found to be taxiing back and forth to gun stores, buying ammunition as well as some explosive materials. That raised the alert in Texas near Killeen, near Fort Hood, where authorities were contacted by the gun store owners. When they looked into it, they realized that Nasser Jason Abdu was missing from Fort Campbell. Little background on who he is. He was about to be deployed to Afghanistan on his first tour when he applied for conscientious objector status. His superiors rejected that. Then an Army, a Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army Review Board overturned that. He was then found to have child pornography on his government computer. They were looking into that charge when he went AWOL on July 4th.
Let's cut that short and just bust out the update, because you're already getting all the regular ingredients. All, of course, child porn. Oh, yeah, of course, all these things in the manufacturing of the Patsy Parade that we see constantly. The update here for you just a few moments ago on this July 29th. An AWOL soldier who was allegedly plotting a bomb attack on fellow soldiers near Fort Hood Army Base in Texas appeared in court today and yelled out the name of the man accused of a 2009 shooting rampage that killed 13 at the same Army base. Nidal Hassan, Fort Hood 2009, he yelled. Of course, Hassan was in contact with Alaki, the CIA lackey who dined at the Pentagon. I guess it remains to be seen if Abdo, our latest patsy, has been twittering with Malaki. Quickly, our War Horse update. State Department assembles secret private army in Iraq. That's, of course, Hillary, the former frontrunner in the faux charade. Pentagon report concludes taxpayer money ends up in Taliban hands. Oh, surprise, surprise. Stop the presses again. Majority of Pentagon weapons contracts go over cost estimates. I guess that goes along with our rigged contracts going to fake religious groups. And our last note of War Horse, and our last note on this 728 Binge and Purge, back to black, former U.S. General and NATO Supreme Commander John Shalikashvili dies at the age of 75, and we unfortunately don't have time to go through his amazing and illustrious career, because we've reached our last post, and we are down to the last 13 minutes of this episode, posted last Saturday, July 23rd, to MediaMonarchy.com. Quaid's claim corruption keeping them in Canada. And we ask, is there a question between, or a connection between, rather, phone hackers and star whackers? From the Associated Press, Randy Quaid says he would like to return to the U.S. one day, but he and his wife still fear they're being persecuted by California prosecutors and tabloid media. Although U.S. officials recently refused to seek extradition of the actor and his wife from Canada to face felony vandalism charges in Santa Barbara, California, authorities in the coastal town say they'll still have the couple arrested if they return to the States. The Quaids, who have missed several court appearances in the case, claim they are the victims of corrupt forces and are demanding an investigation. I feel like we've been driven out of the country and that the door's been slammed behind us, Quaid told the Associated Press in a phone interview from British Columbia last Friday. And for what? These phony little trespassing vandalism charges? Santa Barbara can sleep better tonight knowing the Quaids are out of their hair. Quaid sought asylum, claiming he was being hunted by Hollywood star whackers who had killed his friends Keith Carradine and Heath Ledger. Drawing parallels with the phone hacking scandal that has engulfed British papers owned by Post Parent News Corps, Randy Quaid claims he has discussed many details that were included in the Post piece with his attorney on a cell phone before boarding a flight in New York. As the plane was about to leave, the Quaids said Post columnist Michael Rydell contacted him about the allegations, which the Quaids believe could only have been revealed if someone hacked their phone. The paper rejected the allegation in a statement released to the Associated Press late Friday. Michael Rydell categorically denies this claim, the paper said in a statement, stating that Quaid has provided no proof he was hacked. The Quaid say they hope other stars will speak out and that inquiries by U.S. authorities will expose dirty tabloid tactics similar to those surfacing in the U.K. At least they're outraged in England, E.V. Quaid said. I hope that it crosses to New York and people get angry. That report from the New York Post is linked up for you going back to 2008, I believe, and all our other flashback stories on MediaMonarchy.com concerning Quaid's and the Star Whackers are linked up for you. Are phone hacking and star whacking connected? You bet your ass they are. Let's get our related media and memes updates quickly, my friends. And I admit, I never really listened too much to the music. Anything that starts out so big and so popular and so pop, my indie snobbery won't let me really pay attention to it until a little bit later. But unfortunately, Amy Winehouse, 5-time Grammy Award-winning singer, dies, of course, at the magic age of 27.
For Amy Winehouse, her life and lyrics were equally dark. Doomed love and addictions were the inspiration for so many of her songs. Her career was short, her meltdown rapid. She became as well known for her personal problems as her music. Sylvia Young remembers 12-year-old Amy auditioning here at her theatre school in North London.
I thought she was the new Judy Garland, really. And she sang, I think, on the sunny side of the street, very jazzy and amazing. She blew us away. She was naughty, quite often disruptive. Didn't like her academic lessons, although in actual fact she was brilliant. She was probably bored stiff. I think she was near genius in a way.
Brought up in the North London suburbs, Amy Winehouse was born into a Jewish family with a strong history of jazz musicians.
How are you? I remember you.
She broke onto the scene fresh-faced in 2003 with her debut album, Frank, which was nominated for a Mercury. Speaking ahead of the awards, it was clear Amy was passionate about music.
Music is so watered down these days. It's so pishy. You know, there's nothing there to really grab onto in a chart. And that's why it's so important that people can respect an event like this as an important event, you know, as something that means something in music. Just to be stronger than
me. And next year, she went on to scoop an Ivor Novello Award for Stronger Than Me. But her best was yet to come in 2006 with her follow-up album Back to Black, mixing Motown sounds with 60s girl group pop. Rehab, the first single to be released, propelled her to international stardom. The album went on to win 5 Grammys in 2008, making her the first British female to walk off with as many awards in one night. The irony of her lyrics was lost on no one. As her popularity shot up, Winehouse descended into a world of drink and drugs, arrests and failed detoxes. It's thought her relationship with husband Blake Fielder Civil fueled much of her erratic behaviour. She fell apart in November 2007 when he was arrested for beating up a pub landlord and trying to pervert the course of justice. Winehouse herself was arrested and released on bail. No charges were ever brought against her.
It's very difficult to talk positively about Blake because of all the negative connotations that went with him, the drugs that they both enjoyed and took all the time, and the self-harming that we saw and all that kind of thing. And I'm loath to say that he's responsible for her fame, because he's not. It's her talent that got her that fame. But without the dark stuff that he provided, I don't think she'd have had the raw material to produce the music she did produce.
She was an undeniably talented singer. For you I was a flame. She drew comparisons with the likes of Billie Holiday and Nina Simone. For Amy Winehouse, self-destruction was her muse. But in the end, she was defeated by it.
Same old, same bed. Me and my head high and my tears. Now, interestingly enough, someone we have speculated with a capital S on this show about their own untimely demise has released unfinished tribute demo. MIA releases a song called 27. Quote tribute to Amy Winehouse, that song called 27, and you can follow and see so much more on that, like you can in so many other ways, on twitter.com/mediamonarchy. But our other couple media meme updates: judge slashes the appalling $1.5 million file sharing verdict down to a reasonable $54,000. Star Wars helmet designer strikes back against the evil movie Empire. And finally, Netflix shares fall on lower profit forecast. But their bad luck is your good fortune, as you should check out, if you haven't already, NavigatingNetflix.com, my new show with some of the folks of TragedyAndHope.com, breaking down movies, making it worth your while. My friends, this weekend is the new moon, so keep an eye out. And there's something called Lammas, I believe, on August 1st, according to occult calendars of animal and human sacrifice. But, you know, that'd just be another week here in the kingdom, my friends. All your alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups are here. This has been episode 227 for July 29th, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show at MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, as always, my friends, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the World Network video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165. Portland, Oregon, 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.